Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Tribes and environmental groups were quick to challenge President Donald Trump's boundary reductions at Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments. The fight lies with what is allowed under a century-old law designed to protect places important to Americans, including areas deemed sacred to tribes. We look forward to hearing your take on the rollback and shrinking of the boundaries in Utah. We go live right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Officials with the company that wants to build an open-pit copper and gold mine in southwest Alaska say people should give their new plan a chance because it calls for a smaller mine and they don't plan to use cyanide to get the last bits of gold out. Native people who depend heavily on salmon for subsistence remain dubious. They say protecting the water as a cultural resource is critical and hope the federal government considers that before making a decision about mining in the area. Today, we end our five-part series, Alaska Water Wars, taking a look at development and Native communities. Dacia Eaton reports.
Native people in villages who rely on salmon for food and cultural practices are skeptical. Like Crystal Jensen, city manager for Ekwok, a village of about 100 people located on the Nooshigak River, midway between the proposed mine site and Bristol Bay. Jensen, who is Yupik, says she believes a mine of any size will mess up subsistence.
Without our subsistence, we'd be starving. I'd say 75% of our subsistence is fish.
Elders just upriver in Noustuyahawk, a village of about 600, agree. Timothy Wanhola says any size mine is just too risky.
Every year we put up fish. I've known about it since I was small, and now I'm an adult, and I'm having children that are having their children and still living in the same culture. It hasn't gone away, and it will if something happens.
Alana Hurley, who is Yupik, lives in Dillingham and works as a commercial fisherman, also leads United Tribes of Bristol Bay, which was formed to fight the mine. She says they're ready to fight on every available front.
We are preparing. And we'll do whatever it takes, whether it's in the courtroom, whether it's laying in front of bulldozers.
The EPA has received more than 1 million comments on the issue, most supporting protection of Bristol Bay. Hurley says that doesn't surprise her because Bristol Bay is known around the world for its wild salmon. But she says it's not just about fish as food. To Hurley and others, it's about a cultural right to do what their ancestors have done for thousands of years.
This is an indigenous rights issue that all people should be concerned about.
The EPA issued a statement that said it will consider all public input before making a decision. The Pebble Partnership plans to bring on a new investor and file for permits soon. In Anchorage, I'm Dacia Eaton.
The Hopi tribe in northeastern Arizona recently signed a gaming compact with state officials. They're the 22nd and final tribe in the state to sign such a deal and hopes to boost revenue. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
Former tribal chairman Herman Honani signed the 20-year agreement as one of his last actions in office. It allows the 15,000-member Hopi tribe to operate up to 900 Class 3 gaming machines on Hopi land or lease them to other tribes in the state. The Bureau of Indian Affairs still has to approve the deal. According to the Arizona Department of Gaming, revenue from tribal casinos in the state was nearly $2 billion in the 2017 fiscal year. Hopi officials say the gaming compact could generate millions for the tribe as it faces an uncertain financial future with the closure of the Navajo Generating Station in 2019. The 2,250-megawatt coal-fired plant provides a significant portion of Hopi tribal revenue and employs hundreds. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff. Staff.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now, National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Canyon Records, producer of Native American music, including Radmila Cody's Kehasin, Kinship and Hope. All Canyon titles available from iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and CanyonRecords.com. Support by Ramona Farms, wholesome and delicious heirloom crops for a better diet to benefit all people. Christmas delivery of foods from our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions available on orders placed by December 15th online at store.ramonafarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. The past year for Bears Ears National Monument has had its ups and downs. It went from a push for federal protection by a coalition of tribes to a 1.3 million acre national monument designation by former President Barack Obama. And then it went to a monument and a fraction of the original size. Now the legal fight will be decided by the courts. The argument focuses on the Antiquities Act of 1906 that gives broad discretion to presidents to protect culturally or environmentally important areas. The consequences of any legal decision could mean oil and gas development on or near important ancestral land. And even if the courts rule against tribal interests, does that make President Donald Trump's decision to reduce the boundaries right? Today is your chance to weigh in. The number to get in on the conversation is 1-800-996-2848. And is this a question of gross federal overreach on either side? And what do you think? Again, phone lines are open. The number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today on the line from Anchorage, Alaska, is Natalie Landreth, and she is a senior staff attorney at the Native American Rights Fund, and she is a citizen of the Chickasaw Nation. Natalie, it's our pleasure to have you here with us. Welcome to the hour.
Thank you very much for having me. I do appreciate it.
Great to have you. And also here today from the Ute Indian Tribe headquarters is Sean Chapus, and he is a councilman representing the Unkape Yasagre Band of the Ute Indian Tribe. It's our pleasure to welcome Councilman Chapus to the hour. Councilman Chapus, thank you for being with us as well.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
And so, folks, many people are talking about what is going on, the reduction with Bears Ears. There are cheers. There are also cringes, and we are now hearing of more lawsuits. And so I'd like to go ahead and put things a little bit more into context. And to do that, Natalie, can you just define a little bit about what it is we're talking about when we say it has been reduced? What would you like to share?
Well, I think it's important for people to understand we don't generally use the term reduce when we're talking about it as council, at least with inside the Native American Rights Fund, because what this really is a revoke and a replace. The five tribes, Hopi, Zuni, Ute Indian Tribe, represented here by Councilman Chapus, Zuni and the Navajo Nation, had originally requested 1.9 million acres be protected. 1.35 were what the Obama administration ultimately determined should be the size of the monument based on the location of the objects and the amount of land around them that needed to be protected to preserve those objects. And now what we're looking at is a couple hundred thousand acres. They've left 1.1 million acres of land and everything on and in that land totally unprotected. These are now non-contiguous. They're not connected. They have different names, different maps, different boundaries. So to us, we don't refer to it as a reduce. It's a revoke and replace in our view.
And when we take a look at some of the things on paper right now of understanding this designation and what exactly was signed, what more can you tell us, Natalie, even including to incorporating the new area as a Navajo word? Anything you want to share?
Well, generally, I would defer to the Navajo Nation to make any commentary on the inclusion or use of their language or its meaning to them. But I think the other thing I would like to share that's of particular import today about the bear's ears changes that we saw last week is that we have stated, we at the Native American Rights Fund, and I should be clear, we only represent the Hopi, Zuni, and Ute Mountain Ute. The Ute Indian tribe is separately represented by Frederick's Peebles, and the Navajo Nation represents itself through its Attorney General. So we represent just three of the five. And the thing to add this morning, I think, is the report over the weekend that a uranium mining company had been advocating for the reduction of the boundaries in Bear's Ears, specifically so they could mine there. I think that really has to be thrown into this conversation. Because when we at NARF stated last week that we weren't certain why this was happening, partially politics, payback to President Obama, as the administration wants to, roll back many of the things the last president did. But we also suggested that, look, it's about uranium. It's about mining. And when Patagonia made their statement that the president stole your land, what they mean is for these other purposes, taking it away from the American people, from the tribes that advocated for it, to allow for this large-scale mining. And they were called a liar on the tarmac last week by Secretary Zinke. And I think the report this weekend makes clear that who's telling the truth here?
Sure, it can get confusing as we hear more information coming out, and maybe you have your eyes glued to all the information coming out. When it comes to Bear's Ears, what are your thoughts? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we did reach out to the Navajo Nation for a representative to join us. We weren't able to schedule one. We also did invite San Juan County Commissioner Rebecca Benally to be on our show today. She was not able to join us due to a scheduling conflict. We also invited Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke to be on the show today, but we did not hear back from the Department of the Interior as we begin the program. And if any schedules change or if folks are available, including leadership with the Navajo Nation, if anybody wants to join us, we're live for the full hour. You can call in 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And as you stated, Natalie, U.S. Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke did address the press about the boundaries reductions. Here's what he had to say about the Antiquities Act and its use as published on Indians.com.
But it really states three things. And I'll agree that the Antiquities Act over time has done great things for our country and it has protected some of our greatest treasures. But the Antiquities Act itself really has three parts. One is you need an object to protect. And the object is either scientific, prehistoric, historic. Secondly, it applies only to federal land in authority, in that you cannot make a monument over state or private land. And the monument review does not transfer or sell or bring out of any status of land. It was a federal state beginning. It will remain part of the federal estate. And lastly, and perhaps in some minds more importantly, the creation of a monument has to be smallest area compatible with protection of the object.
And if you have thoughts on what you just heard, you can join us at 1-800-996-2848, or you can tweet your thoughts at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And later in the press conference, Interior Secretary Zinke also had this to say.
The president was correct in his asking for a review, and public lands are for the public use and not special interests. I've seen the press hits. No land, not one square inch of land has been transferred or sold. This is not about energy. There is no oil and gas assets. There is no mine within Bear's Ears Monument before or after. So the argument that somehow that President Trump stole land is nefarious, false, and a lie.
And again, you just heard Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. We did invite him to be on the program today, but we did not receive a response from the Department of the Interior. But if there's anything you'd like to add your thoughts on today when it comes to Bears Ears and the reduction of land size that's being held under the monument, you can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And we are definitely going to talk about the Antiquities Act. And Natalie, we know you can take us there, but I'm going to turn to Chairman Chaphoose. Chairman, your reactions to what you just heard.
Well, remember, I'm not a chairman. I'm a councilman.
Oh, sorry about that. Councilman, yes.
All right. Well, see, I think what your listeners need to understand is it's the war of words now. You know, you have the secretary, of course, with his comment. You have the Utah delegation with their comment. But I think going back to what the Antiquities Act was designed to protect, you know, you really need to focus on that. And the fact shouldn't be forgotten that it was five sovereign tribes who actually pushed for this. And it wasn't because the state of Utah or the federal government in this area was sensitive. It's just there was nothing being done to protect it. And there was already damages to the cultural resource, to the environment. So I think people need to remember, you know, we're at a stage of a discussion now, but long before we got to this point, this area, this region has been at the top of the discussion at the state level, the federal level, and the national level. So when you hear their rhetoric, it's like playing ping pong with them. They bounce things off only after something's happened. But what we had advocated as tribal leaders was long before we got here was actually them fulfilling their responsibility to sovereign tribes and having face-to-face consultation and discussions based off of the government-to-government relationship. And if that process would have been done, because that's how we were able to get the monument designated to begin with, then I think you might have had a different outcome. But they chose to make the decision on their own. And now I feel more or less all they're trying to do is justify the action. And people need to understand, you know, right after they've done their – and it wasn't a reduction. What it was a decimation of a monument and then reestablishing a bunch of monuments to kind of replace it. But right away – the Utah delegation, some of their representatives start introducing legislation into Congress, all of a sudden trying to say, oh, but by the way, we heard your concern and this is how we're going to address it. That conversation should have happened at the beginning, which it actually did, but they just didn't like the outcome. So, you know, I have mixed emotions when I hear what they say because I deal with these guys on a day-to-day basis. You know, they talk out of one side of their mouth and in one comment, then I'll say something, another comment. And like I said, it's like a ping pong match. We go back and forth, But you still got to remember this was about protection of scientifically proven and historical, not just by the tribes, but by, you know, scientists and so forth, that this area needs protection. And there was no protection being forthcoming until the monument was put in place. So, you know, there again, they talk about footprints. You know, they're getting technical because it fuels the narrative. But you know, I still feel that as a tribal leader and, you know, that we've done it for the right purpose and we'll fight it as a unified front and we'll be successful.
And Councilman Chaphoose, I want to get your thoughts, too, as we continue to hear from the administration on this. We keep hearing local tribal voices. We know that in that coalition of tribal nations, there are some tribes who don't have reservation land in Utah, like the Zuni Pueblo of New Mexico. What are your thoughts on this, that it's really being pushed, the voices of tribes, local tribes, is being pushed, which it sounds like severing ties that other tribes might have who don't have the right zip code. Your thoughts?
Well, and that kind of goes back to what I said, you know, the play on words that they use to the average citizen makes it sound like, well, what's wrong with this? But what they fail to recognize is if a citizen of any tribe, as a citizen, is speaking, that's their right as an individual. But tribes have formal governments, elected leaders, who are the representation of their nation. They are the ones who should be engaged in this conversation at the government level. So during the press conference, you know, when the president was out here in Salt Lake, he had a group of Navajo citizens. Okay, but they are not the Navajo Nation. The Navajo Nation would have been the vice president. It would have been the president. It would be, you know, chapter president, so forth. Same thing with my tribe. If you have a tribal member speaking, oh, they have a right to speak, but we're the elected body or the legal arm of the nation. So we speak on behalf of the nation. When they try to more or less say, well, because Zuni and Hopi aren't geographically there, there again, that's them making the boundary. And I point this out to people that long before you got to where we're at as a society now, there were no boundaries. It wasn't like the reservation system existed. Them are actions that were taken by the federal government. So just because the Hopi and the Zuni are now in a different state doesn't mean that they do not have a historical or aboriginal claim to the area in question. And the same thing applies with me, because they've used that type of rhetoric like, well, the Ute tribe, they're further up. Why are they in this conversation? Well, we can prove, and every tribe involved in this can prove, that our ancestors were there. There's fossil record or archaeological records, better way to put it. There's petroglyphs, there's dwellings, there's ceremonial areas. So it's just another way of dividing Indian country in my mind as a tribal leader, because it's always been a tactic when you deal with Native nations is to separate them. But in this instance, this is the model of when Native Americans combine their resource. And people need to remember, it was never about ownership. That's something I think people get caught up in too, is when we put forth this effort to protect this area, its significance to us, nowhere in there did we make it an exclusive right to us. We just brought to the table a knowledge that predated the United States as well as the state of Utah. And we felt that it was important that this knowledge and this history was protected, because there again, it wasn't. It was, you know, there was looting going on. There was desecration of sacred sites. I mean, so I think people have to really, as they proceed through this whole debate, really need to take a better look at really what is the conversation going on. Not so much the political zingers that fly out there, but what is the root of this, and what is the benefit, and what could be the consequences if this isn't allowed, or if the monument is destroyed the way it is.
And we hope to get to some of that today, and we know there are many voices that do need to be heard. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Councilman Chapoose, we do appreciate you being here with us. Let's go ahead and take our first call. We're going to say hello to Nikos in Anchorage, Alaska, tuned in on KNBA. Nikos, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Hi, good morning. Hey, hello to all my relations. My name is Nikos Pastos. I'm an Indian from Montana, Salish Kootenai Pendere, the Flathead Nation, and I live in Anchorage, Alaska. We're very, our family and friends are very opposed to Ryan Zinke's assertion of the president's unlawful, you know, an unauthorized taking of land that so many of these sovereign tribes had put protections, which had been the custom in our country and the law. These are sacred lands. The National Historic Preservation Act protects, it doesn't just protect indigenous Native American lands, it protects historic and sacred and cultural places for all of the peoples in America. Okay, so what the Secretary of Interior is doing is testing a way of taking land along with rolling back all these environmental protections. It may not be about energy now in that specific place, but it will be. It's also about the federal government, you know, doing the work of transnational corporations to privatize our land.
And you know, some of that is what we're seeing in the reports or the article that Natalie was referring to at the top of the hour of this. And even more folks are doing reporting and taking a look at, okay, what is under the ground, both in the original designation, in the new designation? Maybe that's something you'd like to comment on. You can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Nikos, thank you for your call. And Natalie, we're getting closer to the law and the letter of the law. Is there anything you want to share on things you've heard so far that just need some clarification or anything you want to add?
Well, I think two things. There's not a lot to add to what Councilman Chaput said. He was absolutely right on. One thing I think people need to understand is that contacting an individual Indian is not consultation with that tribe. And I have a hard time understanding why a federal agency would think that. And so, no, consultation did not occur in the run-up to this report. If you're consulting with a tribe, you go to their elected leadership. That's what it means. The other thing I really want to point out to people is that Councilman was also pointing out the sort of back and forth, people saying, well, it's about mining, and Secretary Zinke saying, no, it's not. Well, you don't need to believe either side. You just have to look at the proclamation itself. Right near the end on page 4 of 5, if you're looking at the actual document, it says, and I'm quoting, at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on the date that is 60 days after the date of this proclamation, the public lands excluded from the monument reservation shall be open to, number one, entry, location, selection, sale, or other disposition under the public land laws. Number two, disposition under all laws relating to mineral and geothermal leasing. And number three, location, entry, and patent under the mining laws. If it's not about mining, if it's not about uranium, and it's not about this, why is it in the proclamation itself? You don't need to look any further. It's right there.
And Natalie, something else I think we keep hearing too, and later on in that press conference, Interior Secretary Zinke was saying that his recommendation was to revise the boundaries of 4 and look at 10 different places. And this is what really stood out, that the proclamations didn't fit the law and were inconsistent with the governor's state legislation or congressional delegation. That's what he stated was the reason these places need to be looked at, that they were inconsistent with the law. What is your thought on what's being looked at and what changed?
Well, my sense is that there's a couple of different things there. So the Antiquities Act created, first of all, let me step back. The Constitution basically vests all authority over federal property, which is what this is, in Congress. And Congress can choose to delegate little pieces of that to the president, to the executive. And they have done that in the Antiquities Act. And they specifically chose, although there was discussion, they specifically chose just to give the president authority to create monuments, not to disestablish or alter them. The laws before and after that, in even this Congress, allowed for the president to create protections and then remove them.
And Natalie, I imagine that's something that is really going to get bigger as we get closer to court cases. I'm going to put a pause right there. I'll let you finish after the break. But folks, again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We are talking about Bears Ears. And if there's something you'd like to share, you can give us a ring. All opinions are welcome. Maybe you're thinking something different. Well, we want to hear from you too. 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Bringing life to a puppet requires talent, skill, and a lot of imagination. Native puppeteers who bring life to characters like Bob the Eagle and Nana Buju also factor in their language and culture. Join us for the next Native America Calling as we hear from Native puppeteers and their fuzzy alter egos.
Hey, oh, hey. Hey, yeah.
Buju, deji kan minu ayawin gabe bibun. Dange gwenenege nongam. Ganoj 1-800-318-2596. Gema mawadishuin go.cms.gov/native health. Gaund in Nagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Miigwech.
Break the silence in sexual violence.
There's nothing traditional about sexual violence. If you've been a victim of sexual violence, take the first step and tell someone. If you decide to report this crime to the police, your local shelter can help provide support services and ensure your case doesn't fall through the cracks. Join us in stopping sexual violence in our communities. Break the silence. Support provided by the Native American Community Board.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thank you for joining us. We're glad that you have your ears open to today's topic, and maybe you want to open it to others, or maybe you want to tell us about a topic you wish we would cover. You can send us an email to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And we are talking about Bears Ears National Monument today. Recently, President Trump significantly reduced the monument boundaries, but important archaeological areas like the Dollhouse Ruin or Newspaper Rock will still be protected. And what do you think about this? All opinions are welcome. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And we bring back our guests. Joining us today is Sean Chapus, and he is a councilman representing the Yucampe Segre Band of the Ute Indian Tribe. It's our pleasure to have Councilman Chapus here with us. And Councilman, go ahead and say your tribal nation, because I don't think I'm doing a good job. Go ahead and introduce, and if you do want to say hello to your community, please do.
All right. First of all, I'm an Uncapagre representative of the Ute Tribe. So you're pretty close, but you can just call me a council member. That works better. And to all Native nations out there, hey, it's another day on the res, you know, life goes on.
You know, it does. It does. And it goes on strong. Thank you for being with us. Also here on the line from Anchorage, Alaska is Natalie Landreth. She's a senior staff attorney at the Native American Rights Fund, and she is a citizen of the Chickasaw Nation. Natalie, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Natalie, right before the break, you were breaking it down and getting us closer to more understanding. I want to give you a moment to finish your thought and if there's anything else you want to add, go ahead.
Well, I think before the break, we were talking about sort of the origin of the Antiquities Act and the idea, and this is described in our complaint, which is posted on NARF's website for everybody to see, that Congress never gave the president the authority to revoke monuments the way that he's done and replace them with smaller ones of the size of his choosing. But I do want to talk about one of the things in your clips of Secretary Zinke talking about how you have to protect an object and it has to be the smallest size. And this is where you're going to see the legal arguments. An object under the law doesn't mean something that you can hold in your hand. There are already cases about this object. You know, the courts have already ruled that the Grand Canyon is an object. It can be a place. It can be, you know, as long as you're able to describe what it is and why it needs to be protected. The law already says that the existing president has discretion to create. And as I mentioned, there is no discretion given by Congress to revoke. But I think it's important that's where you're going to see the discussion, is that they are trying to say that it was incorrectly created in the first place. But there is no legal precedent for that whatsoever. The discretion to create lies with the sitting president. The successor does not have authority to undermine the previous president's discretion. I don't want to get way too technical, but I just want to give people a heads up that that is where the discussion is going to be. It's going to be over federal power and authority, and that's the source of it.
And something that also piqued my ears in the press conference, Natalie, was talking about things that are protected, and Interior Secretary Zinke was talking about protecting traditional uses of the land, but added, unless those uses threaten the object. What does that mean? Can you interpret any of that for me?
Sure, and I think it's important to point out that the original Bears Ears Proclamation went a long way, the Obama one from December of last year, protected all of those traditional pre-existing uses. So anybody who thought that they had been removed didn't read the proclamation. And I believe what he's referring to is that when you protect something under the Antiquities Act, it has to, and you allow certain activities, they're supposed to be consistent with the proper care and management of those lands. So he's using terminology from the Act that you can allow or disallow certain activities based on how you think they will affect the items you intend to protect.
So could that get to a point where, and we've heard from a lot of natives who connect to this area for seeking different plants for ceremonial use. Could it ever get to a point where someone says, well, you can't pick those plants anymore? It's harming. I mean, could we ever get to those kind of details?
Those are the kinds of activities that were reserved in the original Obama proclamation, and those are the kinds of protections that are now lost in the revocation.
All right. Maybe somebody has thoughts on that. You can join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Natalie Narf has put a lawsuit on the table. Any more details you can give us there, and where does it stand?
Right. So Narf represents three of the five tribes involved, the Hopi, the Zuni, and the Ute Mountain Ute. Councilman Chapuse here, his tribe is on the complaint with us. They're represented by Frederick's Peoples. And the Navajo Nation is representing itself through its Attorney General branch and her office. We are taking a united stand. We have filed together. We will continue to work together as the tribes and do everything we can to fight this together. That complaint has been filed, and that's all that's happened so far.
All right. Thank you for that. Let's go ahead and open up these phone lines again. 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join us. Let's go ahead and say hello to Franklin in Leech Lake, Minnesota. Franklin, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm from Leech Lake Reservation, Anishinaabe, and I just wanted to comment that all tribes are under the same situation on the land issue. And you can't go into the congressional statutes and everything and fight them like on the Antiquities Act. You can't do that because that's what they want you to do. You take the treaty, you stand under the treaty, put it under the Constitution, and stay there. Once you get out into their laws that Congress statutes Congress passed, that's what they did for. But if you go under the original treaty, put it under the Constitution and stay there. They claim, both Democrats and Republicans and Trump claim it's a country of laws. Let them follow the law. In the law states, in the Constitution, treaties are the supreme law of the land. And what it'll do is to try to stand up and do that, it'll make them clarify preliminary power. It's actually laws of occupation are applying to us. It's occupied land. That's the only way they're taking it. And they want us to go this other route. They're hiding this from the world.
All right, Franklin, I'm going to turn that to Natalie. Any thoughts on seeing this and thinking of treaties?
All I can say at this point is that we have not included a treaty claim in the complaint. We have included claims under the Antiquities Act as well as a direct violation of the separation of powers for overstepping the authority granted to the executive.
All right. Franklin, thank you for your call. Let's take another. We're going to say hello to Mary, who called 1-800-99-NATIVE. Mary is in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. Mary, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. every time I hear when the state and federal and international governments are to conserve and protect anything pertaining to native lands, artifacts, these things have been going on forever, and then when you try and contact these individuals and agencies, they deny their misdeeds, and they don't get punished for the misdeeds. And in the process of the Native American lands, not only are they doing that, but they're abusing the people. And that, again, is a crime. And these kinds of things will go on and on forever until these people who commit crimes are fined and put in jail because they're breaking the law.
Right.
Why are they breaking the law and being allowed to get away with it?
All right, Mary, thank you for asking those questions. Thank you for calling there in Bethel, Alaska. We're going to stay in Alaska and say hello to Warren, who is in Dillingham. Warren, go ahead. You're on air.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. But I was it kind of dawned on me that the last administration went through all the meetings, and thank goodness he contacted the tribes and to go establish this monument down in Low 48. And several months ago, there was a call in on this same station that that somehow our government always choose to ignore the already 15 uranium mines tainted you guys' tribal lands, ancestral lands already. And thank goodness that lady got a $700,000 grant to do a study. How is it that our government is able to pollute the lands throughout the tribal areas recognized as, like here in Alaska, we got this pebble, a foreign government from our wonderful neighbor, a large Canadian company whose international mine, not only here in Alaska, wanted to establish a mine here in Alaska, but already has mines in Africa and everywhere else. How is it that our government is able to pollute the lands, our ancestral lands, who have been here for over a millennium?
Sure, and we know there are definitely deep roots into this. And Warren, I'm sure your questions, there's other people who share and want to know the answer to it as well. And if you have any questions today about what this means, or maybe you're relating to it and where you live, just like Warren did, what are you thinking? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Natalie, is there anything there that you can help our caller Warren think through? Or maybe you have answers. Go ahead.
Well, the only thing that I can add, you know, for the last two callers is that I think one of the ways that NARF in general talks about these is we refer to, you know, how the battlefields never really went away. They just shifted, you know, from on the land into the courtrooms in a lot of ways. And so we refer to all of these as battles, and this is the way that we fight back, is to take them to court and make them answer to their own laws that they set out. And that's exactly what we're trying to do here. And we're optimistic. We're optimistic, like Councilman Chabot said, we're optimistic that we're in the right on this one. Even when they set the laws, they have violated them, in our view.
All right. Thank you for that, Warren. Thank you for your call, too. Again, you can join us. Plenty of time left. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Councilman Chapuz, maybe somebody's just tuning in. And is there anything you want to share to help provide even more context why you care about this area? Any of the significance Bears Ears has to your nation that you can publicly share? Is there anything you have?
Well, I think, you know, it's well stated, you know, when we talk about law, you got to remember whose laws are we fighting over. But going back to the previous two callers, what I think Native Americans or Indian country needs to understand is the fights will never end. I mean, that's a known fact for all of us. And when we talk about Aboriginal lands, you know, most of us are not on our original Aboriginal lands. You know, we're on fractions of our traditional land. So when we try to protect areas, you know, that's us really asserting our right. And, you know, the one gentleman brought up treaty rights. Yeah, treaty rights have their role in certain discussions. And you have other legal ways you can fight as tribes. But the most important thing that this has brought up in my mind is, for a long time, Indian issues or Native American issues, they kind of take the back burner on the national stage. But this situation has reawakened Native country or Indian nations to remember that, you know, even though we may not agree with the system that we have or some of the parameters we're caught under, we have an obligation. I have an obligation as a tribal leader to still defend and protect the identity of my people. And Bear's Ears happens to be a reflection of that. Because there again, I may not be there today, but it's not because I chose not to be there. You know, I'm put in a location based off of what the federal government saw was in my best interest. And so I think what we continue to fight is the paternalistic approach that goes on here in the United States as far as it involves Native American tribes. And going forward, as the laws are tested, you know, I mean, I agree with some of the caller's comment earlier, you know, you shouldn't do it. But at the same time, you can't avoid the fight that is in front of you. And I still believe that, you know, we will be successful in our defense because we followed the process. We followed the rules as they had set forth for all of us. And so it'll be interesting to watch. But Indian tribes in general, be it individuals or tribal leaders, I think have come to a different paradigm in history as far as how we are going to deal with issues like this going forward. And I think it's going to make people uncomfortable. I think it's going to make a lot of people, you know, have to look back and not so much look at themselves, but look at the relationship between the government, Native American tribes, local governments, and Native American tribes. So, you know, there's a lot to this discussion that could go on for hours, but I just want people to never lose sight of what this really has always been about. You know, it's been about protecting something that's not just special to me, but part of the history and will be part of what teaches us going forward the importance of communication and recognizing each other's rights.
And Councilman, what do you think about the shift in designating this area and protecting it or making it a monument? What are your thoughts that protect some parts, protect some places where there are markings, but not protect others? What are your thoughts on that? Or have you thought why they would take this kind of approach?
Well, it's funny because what I hear from them is more or less, okay, I'm the tribal member. I'm the tribal leader. I'm the guy who makes this push because of my culture. But in essence, what they're telling me is, no, I determine your culture. And it goes back to my statement. See, it's that paternalistic approach that they use on Native American tribes. But people need to remember, Indian tribes in general throughout the nation all have specific issues pertaining to them. But here in Utah, which I'm a citizen of, you know, I'm a resident of Utah, let's put it that way, there's an agenda that was always put forward, you know, long before Bear's Ears. And I think people need to go back to the original request of the nations, you know, the 1.9 million acres. But what was designated was actually, it reflects Congressman Rob Bishop's PLI plan, because there was a congressional push through him to introduce a bill to deal with these areas. So there was a compromise done back then. But here in Utah, you know, and it may not be that way where other callers are calling, but in Utah, there's been a mindset from the politician, the Utah congressional delegation. They felt slighted by the federal government as far as not being able to access all these federal public lands. And what's crazy here is, in this public land debate and federal lands, there are 7 sovereign reservations in the state of Utah that are wealthy as far as resource, potential development for, you know, their heart's desires, put that way. And it's always been an attack on Indian country here in Utah. And so the monument, I think, was just one of the means to push forward that agenda that always existed here in Utah. And you've got a perfect situation with a president who's got an agenda who requires congressional support and you have a well-established Senator Orrin Hatch, who's got sway in Congress. So it's put Indian country kind of on the chopping block in issues, not just over this monument, but other issues going forward. So there's more to this conversation than the monument. It's just the monument is the battle that we're facing now. But I think we all have to think beyond just the momentary fight and realize that this didn't happen overnight. This is a continuation of Native American relationships with the United States government. And all it's done is it's filtered out into the public to digest. You know, in the 1800s when this was going on, nobody would have known what happened. I mean, you'd be lucky if you had saw a clip on a newspaper if you could read. But we're in a new era where real-time information, where real-time issues as they arise here in this state and other states involving Native American tribes, public citizens, stuff, it's going out to the masses. And so everybody's kind of trying to catch their breath, trying to find out exactly what is this really about. So, you know, in that, I think that you just have to really pay real close attention. And, you know, as the attorney from NARF represents, you know, I mean, she's got her responsibility, just like, you know, when we have our legal staff. But from the tribal leader standpoint, it's a lot more broad than this one discussion. You know, this is really a fight for survival for us in Indian country, because we know that, you know, the lands that we hold now as our homes, it's been proven that we can be removed or displaced. And for us, we're concerned because we see that same 1800, you know, in the 1800s mentality start resurrecting itself. It's just that using this as the means to get there.
And I'm sure that you know, makes people uneasy in connecting things the way you just did. And when we talk about working with tribal nations, I'm also wondering about if there was any consultation. I think we heard the answer is no, but I want to ask you directly. And then also when we talked about this and what happened last winter, there was even talk about co-management and working with the coalition that was designated. Anything you want to say about any of that? Go ahead.
Okay, there was the only consultation that really existed was back when the President Obama and Secretary Jewell, they engaged in consultation. I think shortly after this president took office and Secretary Zinke was put in his position, we had one discussion with him on this as a coalition. I think it was a one-hour discussion. And in that discussion, it wasn't really meaningful consultation. It was just an agree and meet. And then it was always, but we will work with you going forward. And then since that time, we didn't hear a word. What we found out about it was more or less the day that they announced it. We had seen documents which were floating around saying there was possible changes, possible whatever. But when it came down to it, they never did, after they met with us the one time, never did engage us again as a coalition or as tribal leaders. But what's crazy about it was, you know, it's interesting that the commission themselves under the original proclamation was doing exactly what the proclamation said. Because I'm also a commissioner. I sit with the commission that was meeting on a monthly basis. And there was a letter that came out that I never did see a copy, but it was a discussion that came up that the Secretary of the Interior actually contacted the Forest Service and BLM and more or less told them, you know, until this gets resolved, you know, be cautious or stem back on some of the discussion you're having with the commission themselves. But the commission, which compromised the five tribes, once the declaration was done, the original declaration, took that to be this is law, you know, and so we have an obligation to push forward this agenda. And so there was already this co-management model in place. And what's crazy is, like, when you read some of the new proclamation, it's like they've tried to do exactly what the first proclamation did, but more in the mindset of this is how we see it and benefit select few in the state of Utah and some of these congressional people. And so there again, you know, it's a really a complicated discussion to have on a short period of time. But I can tell you the Bears Ears Commission itself from day one was committed and are still committed to fulfill what the proclamation said and were doing exactly as they were asked, but was not given no response from the higher ups as far as the agencies in Washington, D.C. But the local agencies, you know, they were attempting the best they could, the local BLM office, the local Forest Service office, they were attempting to, you know, do as much as they could, but were still under the direction of their superiors.
Well, there is plenty to look into. And folks, maybe you want to get a little more context on what we were just referring to. You can go to our website, nativeamericacalling.com, type in bear's ears and hear some of the coverage and talking about the coalition and, you know, learning about what it was and what it is now. We encourage you. And if there are more thoughts on this topic that you'd like to explore, I also do want to just remind folks that we did reach out to the Department of Interior. We also reached out to San Juan County Commissioner Rebecca Benally, but we weren't able to have them on the show today. If they do want to chat with us, we're ready. You can always reach out to us, too. And maybe you have more thoughts. We know there are people in Utah who supported this. What are you thinking, too? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. I do appreciate both of our guests today. And Natalie, a website if people want to continue to follow what NARF is doing about this.
Yes, there are two different ways to follow this. If you would like legal updates from NARF, you can go to www.narf.org. But I also encourage you to take a look at the huge amount of background information that went into the establishment of the monument, all the tribal resolutions, and other information. And it's www.bearsearscoalition.org. And on the bearsearscoalition.org website, there's also a way for you to donate to the Ute Tribe, Navajo Nation, and NARF.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for our program today. Thanks again, Natalie Landreth, also Councilman Sean Chapoose. We are back again tomorrow with a show about Native American puppeteers. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. Thank you for starting off your week with us again. We appreciate any time you tune in, whether it be live or if you found us in our archives on NativeAmericaCalling.com.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians working to improve health and safety policies and programs in K-12 schools with American Indian or Alaska Native enrollment over 50%. The School Health Index Self-Assessment and Planning Guide was developed to enable schools to identify strengths and weaknesses of health and safety policies, develop action plans for improving student and staff health, and engage teachers, parents, students, and the community in promoting health-enhancing behaviors and better health. Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.